Okay, we are in the book of Hebrews, and we went through the first two chapters last time. And just to sort of remind everybody, I am generally working off of an outline that was done by James Trim, and he's looking at it from the perspective of Hebrews being commentary and expansion on Psalm 110. So the first thing that we did last time is that we established that Yeshua is above the angels. Okay? That was what we spent most of our time doing last time, is that establishing that he's above the angels. Now what we're going to do starting here is we're going to start with, we're going to establish that he's also greater than Moses. And that's going to become important later on, because one of the things that's going to happen is he's going to compare the Mosaic covenant with the new covenant. And so one of the things that's established is that he has authority to do that. So we'll start in chapter 3. Therefore, holy brothers, you who share in a heavenly calling, consider Yeshua, the apostle and high priest of our confession. All right. Notice now, he's an apostle and a high priest. Okay? And we're going to develop the high priest part later. We may not get to it tonight. Okay? But as we go through this, we'll develop the high priest part of it. But notice he's introducing it here. And he's establishing that Yeshua, in addition to being higher than the angels, is also an apostle, and he's also a high priest. And he's going to justify that later. But this is where it starts. Verse 2, who was faithful to him who appointed him, just as Moses also was faithful in all God's house. For Yeshua has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses, as much more glory as the builder of a house has more honor than the house itself. For every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things is God. Now Moses was faithful in all God's house as a servant, to testify to the things that were to be spoken later. But Christ is faithful over God's house as a son. And we are his house if indeed we hold fast to our confession and our boasting in our hope. Okay, so what he's saying is Moses was faithful. And that the law of Moses is in fact valid, okay? But that Moses himself is a servant, and Yeshua is more than a servant, he's the son. So, and he likens it here to the builder of a house is more glorious than the house itself, and of course this refers back to the fact that Yeshua is God, creator of the universe. And then he says, we are his house. Verse 6, we are his house if indeed we hold fast our confidence and our boasting in our hope. Okay? So what are we boasting in?
Messiah.
Yeah, our hope of what?
Messiah.
Redemption.
Yeah, I think redemption is probably as good as any. We're going to see here in a minute that we're going to enter into a talk about rest, and that's certainly part of the hope that we have, is the rest that we enter into. Verse 7, therefore, notice the therefore has to have something that comes before. So what I'm suggesting is that the therefore is in relationship to what we've just said. Therefore, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion, on the day of testing in the wilderness, where your fathers put me to the test and saw my works for 40 years. Therefore, I was provoked by that generation and said, they always go astray in their heart. They have not known my ways. As I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Okay, this is a quote from Psalm 95. And if you read it in Psalm 95, it reads just slightly different. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as at Meribah, as on the day at Massah, in the wilderness, where your fathers put me to the test and put me to the proof, though they had seen my work. For 40 years I loathed that generation and said, They are a people who go astray in their heart. They have not known my ways. Therefore, I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Okay? So the specific rebellion that's being referred to is the one at Massa and Meribah. Mm-hmm. Okay? What was that one?
Meribah was the bitter water.
Yeah.
And they, oh, the bitter water. They threw the tree.
That's right. In other words, that's the bitter water that was in Exodus. And it was the first, you know, they're in the wilderness, they don't have anything to drink, and the water that they come to is bitter. And they complain, and Moses is instructed to take a tree and throw a branch into the water, and the water is then made sweet. Okay? So that specifically is what's being talked about here. All right. Now, rest can be, at least according to the outline I'm following here, in three senses. The first sense is going to be the Sabbath, because we're going to talk about the Sabbath. So the Sabbath rest is one sense. And then the rest which we who believe in Yeshua enter into. Okay? In other words, the rest of basically being sure of your salvation, being sure of your place in Messiah, the peace, if you will, of knowing the Messiah. And then the third one is there's a rest that remains to be entered into. And we'll see what each of those is as we go along here. Verse 12, take care, brothers, lest there be in any of you an evil, unbelieving heart leading you to fall away from the living God, but exhort one another every day as long as it is called today, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we share in Christ if indeed we hold our original confidence firm to the end. As it is said, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion. Now, what's this business with today? We went over this last time. The last time we went through Hebrews, which may be a while back for most of you.
Obvious answer, deal with it in the present.
Okay, the obvious answer is deal with it in the present, and that's certainly true. You can also look at it as today is being anything short of that day. Okay? In other words, we have a yet future thing which is called that day or the day of the Lord. Yeah, in that day and so forth. And up until then is this day, if you understand what I'm saying. And you can also see it, as you said, which is deal with it now, don't put it off. And that I believe is also a very sound interpretation, but it could also be up until that day, in sort of a technical sense, if you understand what I'm saying. Now, what he's saying is, up in Psalm 95, is that our ancestors in the wilderness hardened their hearts and rebelled. Okay? And he's saying to us, do not harden your heart. Hardness of heart is kind of an interesting concept. And we did a study on it a couple years ago, and I'm not sure I can reproduce it on the fly. But there are a couple of things that are interesting. And the place that's coming to my mind is the place where Peter walks on water. And he gets out of the boat, and he's walking toward Yeshua. And the text specifically says, then he began to sink. Now, I don't know about you, but have you ever just sort of walked off the edge of a swimming pool? Do you begin to sink?
You sort of sink, like, right away.
Yeah. And the text sort of reads like, you know, his ankles were getting wet and his knees were getting damp and he was sort of, you know, like you would think of going into quicksand or something like that. So it's a slow kind of a thing. And what Yeshua rebukes him for, interestingly enough, is hardness of heart. In the subsequent, let's go there. Somebody tell me where it is. We'll go there. It's really kind of an interesting. Anybody know where it is right offhand? Matthew 14:29. In verse 30.
It's Mark 6, 45, 52, or John 6, 15.
All right, let's look at each of them, because the subsequent is different in each of them. But here in Matthew, while we're there, verse 30. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Yeshua immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, "O ye of little faith, why did you doubt?" And then they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those on the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." Okay, so anyway, let's say you have this idea of beginning to sink, which is kind of fascinating.
I think the passage you may be looking for is the Mark one.
Okay, what is that one?
And that would be 6, the passage is 52.
Okay.
That's at the end.
Okay. There's one, oh, there we go, yeah. It's at verse 46, disciples got into the boat, and he's comes trudging out after him, and after them, and they say, "It's a ghost." And he says, "You know, don't take heart, do not be afraid, it is I." And verse 51, and he got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased, and they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. This is referring back to the loaves, and in other words, the incident happens after the loaves and fishes. It's referring back, and their lack of understanding and their lack of faith, and Peter's problem, is all of a piece, if you will, and it's due to hardness of heart. Okay, now we think of hardness of heart as someone who has set himself obdurately against God or against something. You know, you sort of set your face like flint, and that's not the case with these guys. These guys are walking with Yeshua. They're seeing him do miracles. They step out of the boat and walk on water, at least Peter does. They see him walking on water, and yet he describes their hearts as being hardened. And the reason I'm talking about this, obviously, is because the writer of Hebrews is talking about hardness of heart also. So what's hardness of heart, then, in this context? No, the comment was, is it like short-term memory loss where you sort of don't, well, in a sense it is. Go ahead, Paul.
Could it also just be their pride?
No.
They're just kind of puffed up and they just...
No, the answer there was pride, and I don't think so.
Okay.
What I've always heard it described, and it makes a great deal of sense to me, is basically you have your attention on something besides God.
Distracted.
In other words, you're distracted. The world has distracted you. And, you know, that's what happened to Peter, isn't it? He sees Yeshua out there and just gets, you know, has this Peter moment, you know, where he just jumps out of the boat with both feet and he's going toward Yeshua, and all of a sudden he realizes what he's... It's sort of like the...
Wait a second, where am I?
Yeah, it's sort of like the roadrunner and the coyote, you know, where the roadrunner goes running off the edge of the cliff and he's standing there on the edge of the cliff and all of a sudden realizes he's off the edge of the cliff and down he goes. I mean, it's very much... What?
He begins to sink.
Yes, he begins to sink. yeah, but it's very much that kind of a moment. He starts off focused on Yeshua. And as he's focused on Yeshua and doing what Yeshua has told him to do, he just, you know, trippity trips across the water. I'm probably not even leaving tracks. And then all of a sudden he realizes where he is. And he goes, oh. And, you know, I can't do this.
What, there's something that happens to us. He's doing, it's some book we've read or something where someone's at a point and he goes, this is impossible.
Yeah.
And
Yeshua describes that as hardness of heart. Okay? And so, what?
Does that connect to? No, this is good. does that connect to the hardness of heart that we have before we put the Torah on our heart?
Oh, sure.
That what putting the Torah on our heart is getting...
rid of the heart of stone.
Yes, getting rid of the heart of stone, but it's also putting our eye on God, mm-hmm. is what replaces... I mean, it's still the same Torah. It's the exact same law. It's the place that makes the difference. And so therefore, we still have the exact same heart. It's the place that we've got our heart.
No, we don't have the same heart.
Well, but I'm saying... In this case, Peter is still the same person. It's his connection to God.
Right. The comment was that, is this similar to the New Covenant passage, which we'll get to in a while, of writing the Torah on your heart? And as we've said many times before, that the Torah written on tablets of stone is a metaphor for hearts of stone. In other words, it's a metaphor for hardened hearts. And the Torah is not intended to be written on tablets of stone. It's intended to be written on hearts of flesh. Yeah, Paul?
Tell me what the difference is between the hardness of somebody's heart and having an uncircumcised heart.
This is genealogy.
Okay.
The question was, what's the difference between hardness of heart and having an uncircumcised heart? And this is genealogy. What I see as hardness of heart is being distracted by the world. You know, Peter loves Yeshua, okay? And the disciples love him. They are traveling with him. And yet when they're distracted, they begin to sink, okay? Which is to say they've taken their attention off of him and they have put their attention on the world. Distracted, lack of short-term memory, whatever you want to call it, but they've been distracted by their circumstances and taken their focus off of him, and they begin to sink. That's a hard heart. An uncircumcised heart, at least in my opinion, is one that's in rebellion. Okay? One that has never submitted to God. In other words, has never been circumcised. You know, circumcision is a symbol of submission to the covenant and submission to God. And so if you have an uncircumcised heart, what that says is you're not in submission.
So that means you're an unbeliever?
Not necessarily.
Would that tie into somebody that would be a backslider?
It could. The question was, does that mean you're not? First question was, does that mean you're an unbeliever? And the answer is not necessarily. And the second one was, does that tie into backsliding? And that could be perhaps. The contexts that come to mind just off the top of my head for uncircumcised heart deals with rebellion. I mean, these are people that are just flat out doing their own thing and are adamant about it. Whereas the hardened heart is simply someone who is, you know, knows Yeshua. You know, the people in the wilderness, they knew God. In fact, it's exactly the same situation, isn't it? They knew God. They had just been jerked out of Egypt by him. They witnessed the 10 plagues. They witnessed the destruction of the Egyptian army. They have got the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire in the middle of their camp. Yet they say, you brought us out here to die. We don't have any water. We're going to die of thirst.
We're going back.
Well, isn't that the same thing that happened to Peter?
Yeah.
He steps out of the boat. You know, he's walking by faith in Yeshua. And all of a sudden he realized, oh, I can't do this. And down he goes. Isn't it the same thing?
It is.
Is that a Wile E. Coyote moment?
Yes.
It's, I think, that fear that goes into his heart.
Yeah. That's what it says. It says that he was afraid. And isn't that what's going on with the children of the wilderness? Mm-hmm. Aren't they afraid?
But Pharaoh hardened his heart. He wasn't necessarily.
That's different. That's
not sure
hardened his heart, I think it says.
I'm not sure that's altogether different. The way you just described it, if hardening the heart is taking your eyes off of God and onto the world, that's what Pharaoh would have done.
When did he ever have his face?
Yeah, see, and again, hardness of heart for Pharaoh is different than hardness of heart for a believer. Pharaoh never was in line with God. But we're talking specifically about stuff that applies to us. Okay? Mm-hmm. I don't think any of us falls into the category of a Pharaoh, but certainly we can all fall into the category of a Peter.
Okay.
What about, where would disbelief come in? Would it be uncircumcised heart or hardened heart?
Could be. The question is, where does disbelief come in? Is it circumcised or hardened? And yeah, the answer is yes.
Because I always thought, as far as Peter was concerned, he had his eyes on Yeshua, and then looked down and, oh, I'm walking on water. Disbelief. Anyway.
Yeshua describes it as hardness of heart. Yeah. And what I'm saying is he's taken his eyes off of the source of his power and has put them on the world. It's sort of like one of the things that my pet peeves is when you pray for somebody to be healed. Oh, I know God can heal me. What that says to me is, theoretically, yes, I believe that God can heal me, but I really don't believe he's going to do it right now. And the same thing. What you've done is you've taken your eyes off of God and you've looked at your circumstances. And you've esteemed your circumstances more highly than the power of God. And don't get me wrong, all of us do it. I mean, I'm not sitting here saying that I never do that, because I do. But what Yeshua describes it as is hardness of heart. And what you have here in the book of Hebrews is their hearts were hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. Okay? And again, we think of sin as being rebellion. And yes, rebellion is sin. But in sort of the narrow sense, it's simply taking your eye off the mark, which is God. Okay? Now, don't get me wrong. God is infinitely merciful, and he knows just exactly how he made us, because he made us, and he knows how distractible we are. So it is not the case that he's sitting up there with a smite button, you know, sort of waiting for you to take your eyes off him and, got him. I mean, that's certainly not the case. So, I mean, but understand that taking your eyes off of him will change your physical circumstances. And similarly, keeping your eyes on him will change your physical circumstances. Peter could walk on water. I've never tried that personally, but I've been around a lot of swimming pools and it had never worked. Of course, I've never tried. There may be a first time. But again, understand what we're talking about here is that hard, and now come back to Hebrews, and let's go on to 4:14, which is where Brian wanted to be. For we share in Christ if indeed we hold our original confidence firm to the end. Well, doesn't that fit with what we just said about Peter?
In the end, he held his confidence?
No. He lost his confidence.
Oh, I see.
He lost his confidence. Isn't that what happened to Peter? He started to walk on water. He's looking at Yeshua. You know, as I say, he's having one of these Peter moments where he's just full of enthusiasm. And steps off in all of his enthusiasm with his eyes focused on Yeshua, and then he lost his confidence. And down he went, slowly.
Right. As long as he had his eyes on Yeshua, it's like, oh, I can do it. Oh, I'm standing on water.
Yeah. The comment was that on Shabbat we talked about the difference between Egyptians and Israelis. Egyptians look down at the river because the source of their sustenance is the river. Hebrews look up, because their sustenance comes from the sky in the form of rain. And when Peter looks down and realizes that he can't do this, down he goes. And as long as his focus is on Messiah, everything's fine. And once he loses his confidence, though, his ankles get wet. And if Yeshua doesn't reach out and grab him, he would go under. Okay? Where am I?
15.
As it is said, Hebrews 15, as it is said, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion. For who were these who heard and yet rebelled? Was it not all those who left Egypt led by Moses? And with whom was he provoked for 40 years? Was it not all with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? And with whom did he swear that they would not enter his rest, but those who were disobedient? So we see that they were unable to enter because of unbelief. And another way to say that is lack of confidence.